Okay, I think we can start now for those who wish to take the eight precepts. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Please repeat. These are the eight precepts. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tisavana gamanang nititang. Panati pata veramani sikapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana veramani sikapadang samadhiyami. Abrahmacharya veramani sikapadang samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikapadang samadhiyami. Sura miraya majapamada tana. Veramani sikapadang samadhiyami. Vikala bhojana veramani sikapadang samadhiyami. Nacha gita vadita visukha dasana. Mala ganda vilepana dharana mandana vibhusana tana veramani sikapadang samadhiyami. Ucha sayana mahasayana. Veramani sikapadang samadhiyami. Imani atta sikapadani silena sukatingyanti silena bhoga sampada silena niputingyanti tasma silang visodaye. So those are the eight precepts, which was in the program to give at 9 o'clock today. So those of you who did come in late, does not matter, just to aditan, the eight precepts. It's not that important that you take the eight precepts in front of a monk or a nun. It's important that you keep those precepts. Because we used to make the observation that in some temples on Vaisak day, that people keep 13 precepts. The 13 precepts on Vaisak day means they come in the morning and they take 8 precepts in front of the monk. And when they get hungry in the afternoon, they give up the 8 precepts and they take 5 precepts for the rest of the day, thereby keeping 8 precepts in the morning, 5 precepts in the afternoon, making a total of 13 precepts for the day. Which is a bit silly, so it's more important that you actually keep the precepts than actually that you take them in front of a monk, which is why that I encourage people, if they wish to take an eight precept, they can always determine them, even in front of a Buddha statue, or just make a resolution for themselves to keep those precepts. Because what's the most important thing is the honesty and sincerity. And one is taking those precepts because one really means to follow them. And the reason one follows those eight precepts is because it's an act of renunciation. The five precepts is an act of purity. In other words, one is determined to make sure one doesn't harm other people or oneself. But the eight precepts goes a little bit further. Eating in the afternoon or the evening doesn't hurt anybody. It's just one less thing you have to do to distract yourself. So by keeping the precepts of renunciation and simplicity, it means that you're turning your mind away from sensory things, more to the quiet things in the mind. They are precepts which are especially intended for those who are meditating, which is why when we have meditation retreats, it's usually standard practice to have the eight precepts. Simply because you don't need to watch the TV in the afternoon or the evening or any time of the day if you're meditating, because you're supposed to be watching what happens in the mind rather what happens in a box. And that particular way means one can develop greater sense of peace. And especially today, because it's Vaisak Day, and people who are Buddhists want to remember this occasion as a time for meditation, for reflection on the Dhamma, to make themselves a better human being. And of course, on occasions like this, I cannot forget all those times when I went to, as a layperson, to Buddhist societies for Vaisak. I remember that when I was even teaching, I was teaching all the way in Devon, in the countryside, and because there was no Buddhist temple around, when they had the Vaisak Day, I would just make a special effort to go all the way from Devon to London just for the day and go back late in the evening just to have the Vaisak ceremony. I'd travel, I don't know how many hundreds of miles to get to Vaisak for that ceremony, because it was really important to me as a layperson. And of course, that day you try and live as simply as possible, spend the whole day in the temple meditating and listening to Dhamma to improve one's understanding of Buddhism. It was one day in the year one put aside especially for the spiritual path. And it wasn't much of a sacrifice, because I knew that whatever I gave to the spiritual path, I would get back, it would enhance my enjoyment and my ability to even succeed in my lay life when I was young. So it's a day we put aside. It's not so much of a sacrifice as an investment. Investment in our spiritual path and also in our worldly happiness as well. Especially coming here, we have all these great facilities here to enjoy the day. Yes, later on it will be noisy, but many of you know this place very well. There's all sorts of little areas where you can find some peace. The library will be open, you have these shrine rooms, you can meditate, you can actually read. You can actually spend the time in a wise and fruitful way. It's not such a great idea to spend the time talking to each other, because you do that throughout the rest of the year. In fact, your mouths are very well exercised, but your meditation needs a bit of improvement. So please don't spend the time talking to each other, but do a lot of sitting down peacefully, reflecting upon the nature of your mind, getting it still. There's plenty of places you can do walking meditation, and walking meditation, especially just around the back of this hall, because no one goes around the back here except for the monks, and you've got some nice paths there to do some walking meditation for today. So the day is actually a useful day. And if you do want to sort of study some Dhamma, then go into the library and just get not just a book about anything, but just a book maybe on the suttas, and just read some suttas. And it's a wonderful thing to inspire you about what the real meaning of Buddhism is, what the real meaning of Vaisak is. So I often notice that in many religions that we've lost a lot of the heart of these teachings when we just go for the outer ceremonies. Ceremonies are very good, and it's nice to have chanting, it's nice to see all the flags going up, it's nice to see the Buddha statue. But if that's all we see, the flags and the Buddha statue and the chanting, then Buddhism gets what I call lost in the haze of the incense smoke. You can't see through the incense, through the ceremonies, to what actually is the heart of the teachings. There's a heart of the teachings we try and emphasize during a day like Vaisak. We're celebrating this because this was the day the Buddha became enlightened, became awakened, saw the truth of things, and ended his journey in samsara, so would never get reborn again. And for those of you over the past year who have experienced disappointment, pain, suffering, being abused, being criticized for things you haven't done, if you've been sick, disappointed, remember that this was a cause for the Buddha to become enlightened. It's one of the most beautiful sutras, very, very quick, very short sutra, but a beautiful one, which Venerable Bhikkhu Bodhi pointed out. He called that dependent cessation. It's the way out of samsara. He said when a person contemplates the suffering they've endured, even recently, and the pain, the difficulty, the disappointment, the unsatisfactoriness, the imperfection of life, it just almost gets there, but you never quite get there. And he said that would bring you sort of confidence in the Buddha's teachings. The Buddha also realized that. Also realized that, in this world, no matter how skillful you are, no matter how much effort you put in, there's always frustration and disappointment. Life never goes quite the way it should. And that type of suffering was recognized by the Buddha and said, yes, well done, you're being honest to life. This life isn't just a cakewalk. It's a very hard journey. And it will be a journey when no matter how you try, people will always criticize and put you down. No matter how much good food you eat, you're always going to get sick. No matter just how much hard work you put in, you will not be appreciated. And there'll be disappointment and frustration all the way. And some of those sicknesses can be very, very painful and very hard to endure. And so we recognize that the Buddha said this as well. It's supposed to give us faith and confidence. The Buddha knew what he was talking about. He was being realistic. He was talking not about some life after death, but he was talking about this whole world which we live in. And it's not to be just negative, but the Buddha also showed that way out. That confidence in what the Buddha taught, his main teaching of the Four Noble Truths about suffering and its end of suffering, should be enough to give us confidence. And that confidence, that gives us a sense of joy and happiness. That's from the confidence, the faith we get. That gives us I understand now that this is the problem. It's not as if that I'm doing something wrong. It's not as if that I've made a mistake, that I experience pain and suffering. But it's part of the nature of this world, its existence. So instead of blaming oneself, one realizes that this is the nature of samsara. And from that confidence, that joy comes up, and we get this path of Buddhism, the path out of samsara. Because of that joy, the one realizes, yes, this makes sense. It gives you a sense of tranquility of the body, in the sense of not having to run around here, run around there. One realizes all the running around won't get you anywhere. If there is any truth to be found, it's found right here. Not in the future, not in the past, not in hopes and dreams, but right here in this moment, not in the heaven after death, but in this moment we experience now with all this pain and suffering. This is the place where we're going to find something, because that gives you that sense of tranquility, not running around, not being restless. And once the body starts to become still, then one gets the happiness of the mind. The joy which comes up when we don't waste energy rushing around here and there. And from that joy it becomes very easy to meditate, easy to get still. And from that stillness, that's where we get the seeing things as they truly are, and that's where we get enlightened, and that's where we don't get reborn anymore. In Pali, it is dukkha paccaya satta, satta paccaya sampasadanang, sampasadanang paccaya kaya pasati paccaya, sukha, sukha paccaya samadhi, samadhi paccaya yata bhuti yana dasanang paccaya vimuti. Is a teaching of the Buddha, what, again, Bhikkhu Bodhi said, transcendental dependent origination. It's basically how, from one thing to another, we actually get out of samsara. So just even reflecting on the difficulty of life means one doesn't put any much hope in trying to solve the problem by fixing things up. Instead of fixing things up, we just stop. Put all of our attention in this moment. We let go. We give up. We stop the craving. We stop all this going here and going there, and we stand our ground. When we stand our ground, that's when we get still. When we get still, we get happy. When we get happy, we see things as they truly are. That's the path of Buddhism. It's a very simple path. We have to stop running around backwards and forwards, fixing things up, making things better. Because every time we make things better, every time we fix things up, every time we go doing things, we're missing the place where the Dharma really lives, right in this moment, right here, right now, in this very moment. This is where we find the truth. And that's what we have to do to be able to find the truth. And for those who haven't heard this story before, and many of you have heard this story before, but some of you don't come on a Friday night, I told this story for the Waisak ceremony over in Singapore and Malaysia. It's the story of the old monk. And it's a golden oldie, but some of you haven't heard this before. Once upon a time, there was an old monk. This is especially for the Thai people. I don't think you've heard this story before. Once upon a time, there was an old monk, and he was wandering from place to place on Tudong. He came to a poor man's hut in the middle of the forest, just a couple of days before Pansar, before the rains retreat. And he received food from this poor family. And the poor family asked the monk, "Monk, it is soon to be the rains retreat. Please stay close by to us so we can give you food every day and so you can teach us the Dhamma. There is a beautiful river close by. I can build you a nice kuti. Please stay." And the old monk accepted the invitation. So the farmer built a simple hut for the monk, and for the next 3 months the monk would come every day for alms food, and he would teach the mother and the father and the kids. And after 3 months that family got to love that old monk, and they learnt so much of the Dhamma from that old monk. But after the 3 months had finished, the old monk said, "It's time for me to go." And because they loved and appreciated the wisdom and the compassion of this monk so much, they said, "Please don't go, Venerable Sir." He said, "But I have to go. Please don't go." And they started crying, begging the old monk to stay longer. But the old monk said, "No, it is my custom. I have to go to teach others." "But," said the old monk, "my meditation was so good during the rains retreat, and I noticed how poor you are, so I want to help you. In my meditation, I have seen that very close by there is a buried treasure, and there is so much gold and money in there. It's going to help you become rich, and you won't have to work so hard ever again." "But," said the old monk, "you have to follow instructions." He said, "Tomorrow morning, at dawn, you must stand on the threshold of your hut and take a bow and arrow and face the rising sun. And when the sun rises above the horizon, let the arrow fly, and where the arrow falls, there you will find the great treasure." And the old monk said, "I'm an old monk and I don't lie, it's the truth. But I have to go now." So the monk carried on his journey. And the following morning, the farmer was there at the threshold of his house with his bow and arrow, waiting for the sun to rise. And he gave the spade to his wife. When the sun rose, he put the arrow in the bow and he shot the arrow and it went a long way. And they all ran after it, and the poor old wife, she had to dig the hole. You know what husbands are like. She dug and dug and dug and dug, and what did she find? Nothing, only trouble, because that field belonged to a rich man. And the rich man saw them, and he scolded them, "I'm going to sue you. You have spoiled my land. You can't go digging holes in other people's land," he said to the wife who had the spade. And the wife said, "It's not my fault, it's his fault," pointing to the husband. And the husband said, it's not my fault, it's this old monk's fault. He told me to do this. And the rich man said, what old monk? And the rich man said, I know that old monk. He said, I'm a Buddhist too. And the rich man said, old monks don't lie. There must be something wrong. And the rich man said, look at you, you're so poor, you're so thin. You can't shoot a bow and arrow properly. You need somebody with a bit of meat on their bones, like me. Look, he said. The rich man said, tomorrow I will shoot that bow and arrow. And where that arrow falls, I'm sure we'll find a big treasure, because old monks don't lie. And we'll split it 50-50. So the farmer had no choice. The following morning, it was a rich man who was standing at the threshold of the house with the bow and arrow. And this time the husband had to carry the spade. And when the sun rose, the rich man shot the arrow in the direction of the rising sun. And it went much further. And they all ran after it. And this time the husband, the poor farmer, had to dig the hole. He dug and dug and dug. And what did he find? Nothing, only trouble. Because that field belonged to a general in the army. And the general came with his soldiers and was about to chop their heads off. And he asked the farmer, said, what are you doing digging in my field? You can't do that. And the farmer said, it's the rich man's fault. And the rich man, he told me to do it. And the rich man said, it's the old monk's fault. And the general said, I'm a Buddhist too. I know that monk. Old monks don't lie. You couldn't have followed instructions. And when he heard what the instructions were, he said, look, how can a farmer or a rich man know how to shoot a bow and arrow? You need to be a soldier, trained to be able to do that. So the general said, tomorrow I will shoot that bow and arrow, and we'll split it three ways. So the following morning, they were all there. This time it was the rich man's job to carry the spade. And the general took the bow and arrow, and he faced the rising sun, and he shot the arrow in the direction of the rising sun. Now that went a huge long distance, because he was a soldier. He had been trained in shooting bows and arrows. And they all ran after it. And this time that fat rich man had to dig the hole. Oh, he was panting and sweating, digging a hole deeper and deeper. And what did he find? Nothing, only trouble. Because that field belonged to the king. That was the king's park. And so the king came with his guards. And he arrested a lot of them. And took them to court. And he asked the man who dug the hole, the rich man, he said, no, why did you do that? And he pointed to the general. He said, the general's fault. The general said, no, it's this farmer's fault. And the farmer said, no, it's the old monk's fault. And the king said, I'm a Buddhist too. And he said, I know that old monk. Old monks don't lie. There's something strange here. So he put them all in jail for a couple of days. And he sent his soldiers around the country to search for that old monk. Soon they found him. And they brought him back to the palace. And the king scolded that old monk. You've got all these people into big trouble. Why did you do that, old monk? And the old monk said, because, sire, they did not follow instructions. And the king said, what do you mean? And the old monk said, tomorrow morning, you come with me and bring the general, bring the rich man, and bring the farmer as well. But this time, sire, I'm going to ask you to shoot the arrow. And he said, no, old monks don't lie. There's a treasure there, and we can split it four ways. And one quarter would be enough to please a king, let alone a poor farmer. And of course, the king was very interested, because he knew too that old monks don't lie. So the following morning, the king was there, at the threshold of this poor person's house, with a bow and arrow, and a monk was by his side. And who was carrying the spade? The general this time. It was his turn. So he faced the rising sun. He put the arrow in the bow, and he was just about to shoot the arrow when the monk said, stop! You're not following instructions, sire. What do you mean? Said the king. You told me to stand in the threshold of the poor man's house. That's why I'm standing. Correct, said the monk. I'm facing the rising sun. Correct, said the monk. I'm about to shoot the arrow. Wrong, said the monk. I never told you to shoot the arrow, said the monk. I told you to let it fly. And the king was very smart. He took the arrow out of the bow and he let it fly. Right between his legs. Right where he was standing. And there the general started digging. Then only a few feet underground they found this huge buried treasure. When they split it up four ways, not only the king was happy, but the poor man had so much money he hardly knew what to do with it. And the rich man and the general were happy too. And the moral of that story is that if you start to look for happiness, over there, if you shoot the arrow of craving, over there, you'll only find trouble. If you let the arrow fly, let it go, and it falls where you're standing, or you're sitting right now, right here in this present moment, there you will find the treasure. Peace, happiness and freedom, more than you need, more than you want. And that's true, you know, because I'm an old monk now, and old monks don't lie. So, that's the Waystack story for you today. A golden oldie, but I enjoy it. If you didn't understand any Thai, don't understand, you can translate it into Thai later. Old monks don't lie. Okay, so now it's half past. You can do some meditation or help with the putting up the flags.